Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 16, 2016. We'll begin today with an article on page one, and this is about a curfew in the parks. The headline is "No Curfew for Downtown Parks for Now," and it was written by Allison Petty. Central Park users won't be kicked out after 10 p.m., at least not yet. The Decatur City Council voted 5-2 on Monday to table an ordinance that would have closed the park and nearby Water Street Plaza from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. The curfew is meant to curb vandalism that has occurred in the parks over several years, City Manager Tim Gleason said. Council members expressed a desire to look for other options to deal with those problems. Users of the popular smartphone game Pokemon Go objected to the measure, saying they like to play at night and don't cause problems. Resident Matt Cates represented them, offering a petition with 292 signatures, with the ages ranging from 8 to 67. Cates said the last month has seen a community of Pokemon players forming in the downtown area. Quote, "There's no fighting, no bickering. It's just talking and having fun," he told the council. "I've never seen any vandalism, rough horseplay, or anything. It's nice seeing all of us come together." Several council members said they liked seeing more people downtown and didn't want to discourage the positive activities. Quote, "We created the parks and we made the investment to make our city beautiful, and we want people to use them," Councilwoman Lisa Gregory said. "Shutting the doors at 10 really says, well, maybe we don't want you to use it. We just want to keep it pretty." Mayor Julie Moore Wolf was among the votes to table the measure. She said the Pokemon players brought their concerns to the council's attention, and the council listened. "It's fun that people are using our park. We want them in our park. We want them enjoying it," she said. "But by the same token, you have a small number that tend to ruin the fun. We don't want our park damaged and destroyed." Public Works Director Rick Marley showed photos of damage that has occurred in Central Park, which includes graffiti on the tables, damage to handrails from skateboards, tree vandalism, trash in the fountain, and broken benches. Quote, "People regularly take baths in the fountain," he said. A rash of broken sprinklers also has hurt the grass. "All the problems are expensive to fix at a time when the city doesn't have money to spare, and after the multi-year streetscape investment project that was aimed at increasing the vibrant nature of the area." Council members Pat McDaniel and Jerry Dawson voted against tabling the measure, saying damage and undesirable behaviors in Central Park are a problem. McDaniel said he has talked to people who live downtown who have witnessed violence. City employees clean up blood and bottles, he said. Quote, "Is it going to take somebody getting killed down there to say, oh, we need to do something," he said. "Let's be proactive instead of reactive." Alternative suggestions from council members included cameras or more police patrols. Quote, "A piece of paper or ordinance and the violation on it is not going to stop this damage," said Councilman Bill Faber. "What will stop this damage is a police presence in downtown Decatur, which would benefit more than the park." In other business, Council spent nearly half an hour discussing bids for street repair that members voted 4-3 to reject at the August 1st meeting. The work is to be funded by the city's local motor fuel tax. Several council members expressed concerns about contractors that were deemed non-responsive, with their bids not considered because of failure to comply with the city's minority participation goals. The ordinance, which the council approved in 2015, requires that contractors make a good faith effort to ensure minority workers perform at least 18% of the total hours worked on city projects. When subcontracting opportunities are available, the goal is for 10% of the total dollar amount to be performed by minority-owned businesses. Councilmember Chris Funk and Dawson said they had been contacted by the non-responsive bidders, who were not publicly named, and the companies felt they had complied with the requirements. The bids also came in lower than expected, and some council members had said they wanted to rebid the project to include more work. Moore Wolf, one of the initial no votes, motioned to reconsider the bids that were rejected August 1st, saying it wasn't good business to rebid the work. The council will vote again August 29th. The council also plans a study session for September to review how the bidding process works. Quote, "The whole ordinance is surrounded by a cloud of uncertainty," said Gregory, who asked for the study session. The council also received information from Finance Director Greg Ziantara about the amount the city charges for various licenses and permits, as well as an update on how the city's major revenue streams are performing overall. Another article on the first page has this headline, "More layoffs at Decatur Caterpillar Plant." Caterpillar Incorporated confirmed Monday that new layoffs have been occurring at its factory operations in Decatur. As is usual company policy, the Peoria-based manufacturer would not confirm the number or types of workers involved or say when the latest round of job cuts started. Chatter on social media had pegged the total of jobs lost at more than 40 and said they targeted management positions ranging from engineers to superintendents. Speaking to the Herald and Review, Caterpillar described the staff reductions as part of an ongoing effort by its various business divisions to reduce expenses and stay competitive in tough times. When company spokeswoman Rachel Potts was asked if ongoing meant more layoffs are likely, she said that was a reasonable conclusion. Quote, "I think that is a fair statement across the company, and this is not just happening in Decatur," she added. "It is happening truly globally as these businesses work to continue to get costs cut." Caterpillar had telegraphed a new layoff punch was coming when it announced its second quarter results in July and said the costs of cutting jobs would rise substantially as it shed more workers. Caterpillar is now in an unprecedented fourth year of sales and revenue declines, and slashing costs is its main coping mechanism. Layoff costs for 2016 are now expected to hit $700 million from a previous estimate of $550 million, a jump of 27%. The company reported that its global workforce had dropped by close to 14,000 workers in the past 12 months, as earlier layoffs took hold, falling from 126,800 in June 2015 to $112,900 by June of this year. The number of U.S. workers let go totaled more than 7,000. From Maroa, we have this headline. Maroa Forsyth hires teachers to reduce elementary class sizes. This was written by Chris Lusvardi. Concerns about large classes at Maroa Forsyth Grade School were addressed during a special meeting Monday with the school board approving the hire of two new teachers. The teachers would be added for third and fourth grade, where classes were anticipated to approach or surpass 30 students. Superintendent Mike Williams recommended the additions despite an expected cost of about $100,000 to the district. It's truly in the best interests of the students and staff members, Williams said. We're in a better financial situation than at this point last year. A long-term substitute could be hired for the beginning of the year, which is scheduled to start Thursday, until the full-time hires are finalized, Williams said. Enrollment increased from previous projections as 85 third-grade students have registered along with 91 fourth-graders, Williams said. Each of those grade levels previously were scheduled to have three sections compared with four at the other grades in the school. Williams said enrollment is difficult to predict until the registration process starts. Sometimes it can be back-to-school night or a few days after classes begin before the numbers are finalized, Principal Chris Kaler said. Kaler told the board the additional teachers would get classes to more manageable levels. Although supportive of the plan to hire the teachers, board member Chad Rue said the district cannot continue to spend more money than it generates. After hiring the teachers, the district is expecting to be operating with a $150,000 deficit. Quote, "We don't have enough to do this year after year," Rue said. "We can't say yes every time. It means we're just shifting pain. I won't continually approve deficit spending. It just doesn't make sense." The district plans to use some of the approximately $400,000 in reserves built up in the education fund and keep about $375,000 in its working cash fund, Williams said. In other business, Board President Russ Corey said the details of a plan to fill the vacant high school principal position were still being worked out. The board was meeting in closed session late Monday evening in an effort to complete contract negotiations. Principal Scott Adrian resigned effective August 1st to take a similar position at Dunlap High School. At the urging of attorney Susan Nicholas, board members did not provide further details about the plan despite questions from a cafeteria filled with interested residents and staff members. The board met with its recently hired superintendent search consultants, BWP and Associates, to discuss details of how the replacement to Williams will be selected. His resignation is scheduled to take effect at the end of the school year. Consultant Ron Barnes said the district is in prime position for its search, which could be finished by its winter break. The search process is starting with the consultants talking with various groups on Monday, August 29th, including a scheduled community forum at 7 p.m. in the high school cafeteria. Barnes said BWP wants to get a better feel for what the district is like as the firm helps the board select candidates to interview for the position. Barnes said interviews with about 6 candidates could be scheduled in November. On page 3, we find this article from Mount Zion, written by Ryan Voiles, and the headline is Mount Zion Upgrades Website. The digital gateway for Mount Zion has received a major renovation, and all for a cost that Village Administrator Julie Miller said is insane compared to the other options available. The website, mtzion.com, was unveiled Monday night at the Village's Board of Trustees meeting, with Miller reviewing the numerous features allowed by the site that went live this week. Quote, "This is a project a long time in the making," she said. Among the changes to the site compared to the older one, which used the same URL, includes a front page community calendar to keep residents posted on events in the area. The new site also allows for various pages in the site where residents can pay their water bill, find a frequently asked question to learn the basic village functions and current statutes, as well as ways to contact officials in village departments. The site was created and will be maintained through Municipal Impact, a group that specializes in websites for small communities. Mount Zion paid a one-time $295 setup fee and will be charged $879.45 annually for site maintenance. It is the cost that had Miller and the board especially pleased Monday night. Quote, "I know what websites cost, and this is a freaking bargain," said Trustee Ron Johnson. When the village first looked at updating its website more than a year ago, Miller said estimates for building a custom website would cost as much as $8,225, with an additional annual hosting fee of $1,955. But at a recent conference, Miller said she came into contact with Municipal Impact and their lower costs for a website. Soon afterwards, she contacted other municipalities such as Stonington, who used the site to make sure it was not too good to be true. "We can have this for 10 years, and it still wouldn't cost what it would have to design it the other way," said Miller. Also on page 3, we have this article of local interest. GT Church Love Week overflows with good deeds. It was written by Valerie Wells and has as its dateline Decatur. The group in blue t-shirts at GT Church was getting ready to head out to install smoke detectors in the homes in Galloway Park's neighborhood. But that was only part of what they were doing. Quote, "This is a spiritual mission," said the Reverend Ricky Wallace, youth pastor. The volunteers also were headed out as witnesses of Christ's love and planned to ask the residents of each home if they wanted them to pray for them. Quote, "If they insist on a pastor, go ahead and call me," said Wallace, who planned to hand out extra batteries and other supplies as teams requested them. Quote, "But you've got as much Jesus inside you as I do, and you can pray with them." Last week was Love Week at GT Church, starting in memory of B.G. Nevitt, who was senior pastor at the church until his death in a motorcycle accident in 2013. This year is the church's 60th anniversary, and the Reverend Beth Soares, pastor of Outreach, came up with 60 projects for church members to do, from taking lunches to first responders, to picking up litter in the church's Galloway Park neighborhood, to making care packages for teachers, and having a block party. The staff and volunteers have been putting in 14-hour days to make it all happen. And while they're tired, they're also energized from the connections with the community, she said. The church sent postcards to each of the 400-plus homes in the neighborhood to let them know the volunteers were coming to install free smoke detectors, thanks to help from the Red Cross and the Decatur Fire Department. In addition to the detectors, which have 10-year batteries, the volunteers had fire and tornado safety tips to share with residents and could even secure visual smoke alarms if they found a resident who was hard of hearing. Those would have to be delivered later, but would also be free. Every team included at least one woman, because a lot of families are headed by single mothers who might feel uncomfortable letting men into her house. Wallace said there have been fatalities in the neighborhood due to homes not having smoke detectors, and as a survivor of a fire himself, thanks to a smoke detector, he feels strongly about how important it is to have one. Quote, "Our church goes big," Soares said. The project was spread over 3 days, and Dave Hirsch was involved in all of it. Quote, "Some of the residents were a little standoffish," he said. "I had a single mother the other night who wasn't real forthcoming, so I just told her we were going down the street if she changed her mind. She didn't, but the teams were instructed to not push it if anyone refused the smoke detector." Hirsch also had a good talk with a veteran who fought in the Battle of the Bulge. Wallace was particularly proud of the youth group members who have gone out and worked hard on various projects, particularly picking up litter. Quote, "People talk about kids and how we're losing a whole generation," he said. "These kids proved that wrong." Two photographs by Lisa Morrison accompany this article. One shows Jason Hillier, Terry Walker, and Mark Menser going from door to door in an East Side neighborhood, offering to install a free smoke detector as part of GT Church's Love Week. It shows one gentleman up the stairs at the door while another gentleman and a lady stand nearby on the sidewalk. The second photograph shows Mark Menser, Jason Hillier, and Terry Walker beginning their charitable task. They're walking down the sidewalk in single file. One is carrying a large bag, presumably full of smoke detectors. The second man is carrying a ladder, and the woman is carrying a clipboard and some papers, which probably contain those tips for what to do in case of a fire and a tornado. They're all wearing bright blue t-shirts with the church's logo on the front. In the column called A3 Briefs, we find out about a family campout. Rock Springs Conservation Area will hold a family campout beginning at 7 p.m. on Friday, August 19th through 10 a.m. Saturday, August 20th. Participants can bring their own tent or sign up to borrow one from the Conservation District. Cost is $30 a tent. All ages are welcome, but there must be one adult per tent. Hot dogs, drinks, s'mores, and a campfire will be provided. There will be games and a night hike. You can pre-register online by Wednesday, that's tomorrow, at www.maconcountyconservation.org. Also this from the Conservation District. It's celebrating its 50th year, and it will hold an informal talk from 6 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, August 18th, at Rock Springs Nature Center, called The Next 50 Years. Conservation District staff will lead the discussion. Area residents are invited to share what they think conservation in Macon County might look like in the future. The event is free and no registration is required. One more article from the same Conservation District. They'll host a van trip to the Peoria Riverfront Museum from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, August 21st. Participants will be free to explore the planetarium and theater and discover the Illinois River ecosystem in the river exhibit. The trip departs from Rock Springs Nature Center and is open to all ages. A fee of $15 per person covers all transportation. Participants choose their own admission and lunch, and registration must be before noon on Friday. Prairie Flower Montessori School is open for registration for kindergarten and elementary children ages 5 to 9 and for half-day preschool and toddler children ages 1.5 to 4. Morning and afternoon extended hours are also available, and you can contact them on their website, prairieflowermontessorischool.org, and you can also set up a tour. And we have this announcement from Mattoon. The 6th annual CIL-CON Paranormal Horror Anime and Gaming Convention is slated for Friday through Saturday at the Cross County Mall. The lineup includes professional wrestling, an illusion show, film festival, presentations by paranormal investigators, a craft market, tabletop gaming, video gaming tournaments, and special guests from supernatural-related TV programs. Area psychics will perform tarot, crystal, and aura readings. There will be a selection of craft and handmade items, such as pottery, jewelry, and soap. CIL-CON is scheduled for 1 to 9 p.m. Friday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, and noon to 3 p.m. Sunday. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the August 16th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.